This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
A really cool fun story is that the day I started on StarCraft II, it was like the weekend after they had announced in Korea that the StarCraft II was a thing, mm-hmm. and Penny Arcade had done a comic
right.
on someone, and the comic was about someone's first day at Blizzard on the StarCraft II team, and that was my first day at Blizzard on the StarCraft II team. It was so cool, and I just thought it was like.
Welcome to Game Dev Advice. The Game Developers Podcast, your place for resources and in-depth conversations with other game development professionals. I'm your host, John J.P. Podlasic. I've worked at 10 different game companies, starting back in 1989 with the TurboGrafx-16. Over the decades, I've developed games like Mortal Kombat, Avengers Initiative, Beavis and Butthead, and numerous others. I now work for a startup called Level X. But this podcast isn't about me. It's about you and the game development community. So if you have questions or ideas, give a call, 224-484-7733, or go to the gamedevadvice.com website. So let's kick things off with the new Game Dev Advice. This episode is with Matt Shimberry, CEO of Lightforge Games. We discussed how he and others have built a brand new studio from the ground up to be all remote. His past experience working on games like StarCraft II and Fortnite, the importance of mental health and empathy, along with the ongoing need for much of the industry to get its act together to prevent harassment, toxicity, and turnover. It's also worth noting this was recorded in June of 2021, well before the current Activision Blizzard headlines that have been so frustrating to read about. Hey, how you doing? So we're calling in from tonight.
Hi. So I'm calling in from Raleigh, North Carolina. I lived here for the last 5.5-6 years or so. Cool. And it's hot out here now.
Yeah, it does. That time of the year and the East Coast and all that. So how are you doing with COVID-19 and everything around that?
Fortunately, my wife and I, we weren't directly impacted in any way. We both work from home. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to really just kind of bunker down and, cook a lot of food and stay in, watch a lot of Netflix and keep working. We were definitely much, much more fortunate than many.
In this industry, we are very fortunate to be able to do that and stuff. Cause yeah, it has been very hard on a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely.
So tell me about your current role in this company that you started recently or a few years ago, I guess.
Yeah. My current role is the CEO of Lightforge Games. Lightforge was formed about a year and a half ago, but we just came out of stealth mode in the last month or so. Hmm. And so we are a all new, all remote game studio founded by a bunch of people formerly from Epic and Blizzard. And our kind of main mission is to change how the world plays RPGs.
Wow. That's a great mission, because it's always been very specific, right? You know, it's like, this is how it is, and this is what you do, and don't go outside the lines, right? You know, RPGs have always been very, as somebody doesn't play a lot of them, they felt a bit dogmatic. So that's exciting to hear, actually.
Yeah, that's right. Like we really want to make them far more social and far more flexible and spontaneous. And so, we're not really getting into a lot of details for the game right now, but I think it's a really cool project. I'm super excited about it. And I can't wait to ultimately share more with the world.
Yeah, that's great. So you've been in the industry a while. Tell me how you got started.
Yeah. So I'm one of those people that always knew that I wanted to work in games ever since I was a kid. Going back to like middle school, I was constantly making levels in Warcraft mm-hmm. 2 and Starcraft 1. Right. I, for a while, I was running my own custom Ultima Online server where I like made my own world and I had like my own quests. And I was basically like a DM of my own little UO server for my friends and guildmates and stuff like that. I was running guilds when I was like 15, 16 years old. So I was like always super into games industry.
Yeah.
Actually, my first job, I think I was 16, and I was working from home remote for the Stratix network. I was like a web programmer for Stratix, which was one of the main fan sites for MMOs at the time, Ultima Online in particular. And so always wanted to do it. Went to school for computer science, got into programming. And then pretty quickly after graduating, I got my first job at a place called Cyberlore out in Western Massachusetts. I went to school at UMass Amherst, and they just happened to be like the one game studio in that area of Western Mass. And so I was fortunate enough to get the job there, worked with some awesome folks, actually shared an office with Brenda Romero at that job, which was super cool for like my first job.
Wow.
And then 3 months later, the company went out of business. And so, and so it was actually, the folks who ran that place were amazing, and they really helped everyone get on their feet after that. And so after that, I got the job at Collective out in California, and then was at Blizzard for a while, and then Epic. And so that's kind of my path.
That's great. They were helpful and stuff like that, because sometimes you hear those horror stories, you know, you show up and the telltale and, you know, doors are shut and all that kind of stuff. So that's nice to hear that there was some help with that. So what do you wish you had known when you had started?
Like, one of the things that I knew about, but I didn't really believe, was that burnout is real, and it is a real thing. And, you know, I remember, you know, reading all about it in Game Developers Magazine or Gamma Sutra, or just, you know, hearing about it in general, and always thinking like, oh yeah, sure, I know that some people burn out, but like, but not me. Like, I'm right. Cool. I'm into this. I love this. I've got energy. Like, I'm good. Right. Like,
you know, passion. I'll work through
passion.
It.
Exactly. Exactly. and so, you know, I always thought that it wasn't going to be a problem. And then it just hits you very suddenly, and it hits you way past the point. Like, you really don't realize it as it's brewing, and even after you cross the line, I don't even think you realize, at least I didn't realize it. And so, you know, that's something I think that everyone should be aware of, is that it does, like burnout isn't a sign that you don't love your job enough, or that you're, you know, upset or whatever. Like, burnout can be lots of different things. And so really, not only being mindful of it, which I think is part of the problem, but really setting up your life, you know, everything you do, work, to have those healthy boundaries and keep those healthy boundaries solid.
Yeah. That's a can of worms. Like, I've said before, like, I've gone through burnout numerous times, and it's, you know, I just, like, that's it. I'm out. Basically every decade I would do that in the industry, and then I would get bored. And then, you know, it's like Godfather 2, I tried to get out and they keep pulling me back in, you know,
that's right.
Like, I'm bored, but then it's like, do I want to go back into that? You know, and it always felt like you had to make a choice, like bored and with reasonable hours, or excited with insane hours. And it doesn't have to be like that. Right. You know,
that's right.
You need
that's
to get
right.
smarter about that.
Yeah. I mean, for me, while I was going through it, I had a real like crisis of identity as well, because like I mentioned before, like this, like my whole life, I wanted to work in games. And so, you know, here I am at the time, I guess I was 37, when I was going through 36, somewhere around there, and realizing like, oh man, like, is this like, am I done with games now? Like, is this it? Like, I can't do this anymore. And if I don't do this, then what do I do? Like, you know, this is all I know. This is my entire, you know, career. And, you know, do I just go like write software for some bank or something? Like, you know, no, that sounds awful. That's not who I am. And so, you know, it was such a crisis of identity that, you know, I definitely was someone who really wrapped up my identity in what I did for work. You know, I think in some ways is fine and cool. And yeah, I am proud of the work that I've done, but, you know, I think it just comes back to those boundaries again, of making sure that there is a life outside of work, and that it's not like it shouldn't be a tug of war. It instead can be kind of, there's work time and there's lifetime, and keeping those boundaries up, I think, is important.
Yeah. I think that's key, because once it just blurs, and then you don't know up from down, and you're just like in this vortex, and then it just, you just keep doing it and you keep doing it until you reach that tipping point, and then it's not pretty. I remember.
And modern tools don't help with that, right? Like, the smartphone makes this awful, because now here we are, we've got email all day, we've got Slack pinging all day, we've got, you know, all these things that are just,
boom, boom, boom.
Exactly. And, you know, you feel, at least I certainly felt that I had a team I was responsible for. My team was 65 people spread across the world. And you know, there's always something going on at every hour. And I always felt responsible of like, oh, but I got to help my teammate. They have a question. They need something from me or whatever.
And we're locked down.
No, exactly. exactly.
Right. Yeah, that's totally true. So how did you work through it? Did you step away for a bit and then come back in the industry or change or, you know, whatever you're comfortable
sharing? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, actually, no, I do think it is important to be able to talk about mental health. I think that's really important. Yeah. I will share that I went on a medical leave because it was more to it than just, there was the kind of the mental fatigue burnout aspect and also a physical manifestation as well,
right,
at the same time. And so I actually was seeing a doctor and they urged me to go on a medical leave. And so I think that really helped kind of give me a reset so I could mm-hmm. just kind of like work through it. And I was doing things like I'd go for a walk every single day. I was doing it even like twice a day sometimes. And I thought that was really helpful to just kind of clear my mind. And I was able to focus on healthy things like exercise and food and cooking well and like all that kind of stuff. And so that made a really big difference. And then I ultimately turned that into a much longer break. I think that was something that was just necessary for me.
That's great. And thank you for sharing. And, you know, mental health and challenges around crunch don't often get talked about enough, and it is real. And, I think the industry average is 7 years, right? Because people get into it and then they get, you know, in that meat grinder and, you know, especially when there's like killer deadlines and stuff going on and then it churns people out. And it's like, well, what the hell is that? Like you, the industry loses that knowledge base and is resetting all the time when people grind out after 7 years, not to mention like, that's not fucking cool. Right. Like
it
has a toll on people. Right. So
that's right. And it doesn't have to be that way ultimately the bottom line.
Right.
And so that's a really big thing of what we're doing with Lightforge in particular is making sure that we're setting up a company that from the very beginning is thinking about doing the right thing, embracing mm-hmm. empathy, psychological safety, healthy boundaries, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I know that a lot of startups say things like that. And, but for us, it's a really important part of the mission of who we are. And at the same time, of course, we want to make an awesome game. Like that's still really important. We want to be financially successful. Mm-hmm. And so balancing all those things is certainly important. But the initial impetus for starting the company really was around this idea of mental health.
Yeah. And it helps people looking for a change, right? You attract talent for people that like, I don't want to go through that grind anymore. And that's great. You guys did that. What advice would you give someone, you know, looking to get their first job now here in 2021?
I've always been a big fan of UX and empathy and empathy driven design and things like that. And really mm-hmm. that to me means thinking about things from the other side's point of view, you know, thinking of, you know, design from the player's point of view, or in this case, I think thinking about the team's point of view, mm-hmm. like what is the team? What do you think the team is looking for? What do you think teams need right now? What do companies need? And really thinking about, how you can then position yourself to be that person that the team needs. This is something that I did in my own career years ago, where at the time I was subscribed to actual paper magazine, Game Developers Magazine. Yeah. And I remember reading all the time that constantly in need of game tools programmers, tools programmers, everyone needs tools programmers. There's not enough tools programmers. Like it was a big deal. And I was like, well, I'm a programmer. I can do tools. Like that sounds fine. That sounds like a cool thing. Like, yeah. I'm cool with that. Right. And so I then positioned myself through college to learn the specifics around that particular area. And mm-hmm. then after I graduated, there was a junior tools programmer position. I was fortunate enough it was local, but you know, there were lots of tools positions open at the time. Ultimately I was able to get a job and kind of, I spent the first half of my career in tools. Then ultimately I switched and really focused on UI for the latter half. But it's something that I think that for a lot of the different disciplines that are out there, we've become so specialized. And some of those specializations are hyper needed. And like right now, I would say that it is UI still that is very much needed for a lot of teams, especially these games as a service projects. A lot of games, their entire business model lives within the UI space. All of retention, all of monetization are living in UI screens. Mm-hmm. And so there's just a constant need for UI programmers, UI artists, UI designers. And so if it's something that you think you would be interested in, I think it's something that could be, it's something that I know is needed. And so it tends to, just because of the higher demand, it tends to be easier to get attention. There's a little bit less competition. And so if you're looking to get your foot in the door and you're willing and able to do work such as UI, or pick other specialty, server programming is another one, or tech art is always needed, like things like that. Find the specialty that makes sense for you and learn about it. And if you're interested in it, you're going to have a better time than the positions that tend to get a million candidates.
That's great advice, because there is, you're totally right. There's always a need for tools. Yeah. There is those needs, and especially around UX, like here in Chicago, the DePaul University has this master's in experience design, which is really focused around UX and around interviewing and understanding psychology around screens and wireframes and all that kind of stuff.
That's right.
That's huge. And then on the tool side of helping with builds and making things compile faster and perforce and taking something that would take 10 minutes and making it 10 seconds, those are huge wins. And companies always need those kind of people. And sometimes they don't get the glamour of, you know, gameplay engineer, right?
Yeah. And I've spent my entire career, either the first half was in tools programming, art tools programming, and the second half was on like the UI menu screens of the front ends for StarCraft, Heroes of the Storm, Fortnite, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I've never once felt that I wasn't working on a game or the game. Right.
Oh, yeah.
I always felt like I was doing super awesome, fun, critical, important stuff. And so anyone who's out there and being like, oh, but, you know, it doesn't sound fun to make the tool, or it doesn't sound fun. It's not the game if you're making the achievement screen or something like that. Like that hasn't been my experience. My experience was that those are just as much part of the game and just as fun to work on. Mm-hmm. And so to anyone who's thinking about that, like, you know, take it from me. I feel like I'm a game developer just as much as any, you know, designer or gameplay programmer.
Yeah, no, and that's excellent advice. What about advice for somebody trying to advance their career now in the engineering or UX space? What are your ideas for those persons out there 3, 5, 8 years into the industry?
I think one of the things that I think is really important is that, you know, you're on a team always, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can make Stardew Valley by yourself, and in that case, you don't care about the answer to this question. If you're on a team, if you're at a company, then you're on a team, right? Yeah. And ultimately, you know, as you're advancing your career, I think that it's just vitally important to be a part of the team, right? To help your team members, to mentor the next generation kind of coming up the ranks, to learn from the people above you, to assist the people on your team, to start learning about the workings of the business itself, because these are businesses, and how can you contribute deeper or bigger. And so really, I think, I mean, obviously, I'm kind of skipping over the advance your skills, stay up to date, et cetera, because I view that as table stakes, essentially. Yeah. I think to go further, it's really just, it's a matter of getting deeper into the understanding of the entire process of the larger team to be the leader that ultimately the team and industry is going to be looking for as you're advancing your career. And a lot of companies make a big difference between like the lead and say a principal for a programmer, artist, right, or whatever. Right. Still, you know, if you're a principal and you're not a people lead, you're still a leader of the team, right? Yeah. You're still a technical leader, a vision holder, things like that. Or if you're a principal artist or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And so I think that really developing the kinds of skills that let you kind of be that leader, to communicate your vision, to be a mentor to others, things like that, I think is how you ultimately advance your career.
Yeah. And that's great too, because right, you know, it's more of the management track versus the individual contributor track, but even those people in the IC track are the go-to people for stuff, right?
Yeah, that's right.
They don't sit there with their headphones and tune out the world and write code or do art. They are still answering questions, and they're the, you know, the SMEs, the subject matter experts. So people go to them. And
that's right.
Yeah. You need to be able to answer and mentor and help with the questions and stuff. Yeah. And this kind of bleeds into the next question, which is, you know, your advice around developing interpersonal skills, EQ, you know, soft skills, mm-hmm. like what are your thoughts about that? You've kind of touched on it before.
Oh, I mean, I think that EQ, empathy, things like this are critically important. I'm one of those people that I'd go so far as to say the most important human skill of all is empathy. And so I think that they are critically important. They help with everything from conflict resolution to kind of predicting problems or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. And so how to develop them? I mean, first off, it's kind of being a listener and always practicing listening and really thinking through what the other side might might be thinking or what their challenges might be, or you know, like one example is that it's very common for, like, you know, developers and publishers to have like an adversarial relationship, and you can get like a programmer being like, oh, the, you know, stupid marketing person had and like, you know, like, oh, I remember this one case, like someone was pointing out, like, oh, they had this typo in this, you know, email blast that went out, like, you know, are they even checking their work or whatever? And I was like, hey, you know, this is their bug, right? Like, you have bugs. They're live right now. I can look at Jira. I can see the 600 assigned to whatever. Like, this is their bug. And it's, you know, they're under the gun too. They've got a lot of stuff going on. Things change last minute for them too, right? Like, we're all struggling, right? We're all trying to figure out how to just kind of keep this game going. And so, you know, I think it's always keeping that kind of stuff in mind. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm also, like, my personal style is I like classroom environments. I like books. I like learning. I like listening and kind of learning from others. And mm-hmm. so I think that a lot of my kind of advancement in the, like, earlier days as I was going up, like, through the management track or whatever, was, you know, just reading a ton of different management books, or things like, you know, just working with others kind of books or podcasts or things like that. I think can be just really important to just help you learn tips and tricks and tools that eventually become habit and natural. But you know, sometimes you practice them and they'll be awkward at first, and then you get better at them over and over, and then they become second nature.
Yeah. You know, always want to be learning, right? Like, how can I get better at something? You know, it's kind of like that growth mindset, right? Where you're not like, well, this is the world, this is the way it is, so it's just the way it is.
Yeah, I know.
It is what it is. No, it's like how do you improve? And not always being a conversation, just waiting for a pause to interject, right? But actually listening mm-hmm. to what the person's saying, and not just trying to, like, you know, snowball somebody and just speak over them and everything. But, like, what are they actually saying? Not just, like, trying to just push your point across all the time.
Hey, hope you're enjoying the show. If you are, please go to patreon.com/gamedevadvice. We'd love to see if you can support the show and help new episodes keep coming out. That's patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Thanks.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that a lot of game developers, a lot of folks, I think, certainly of my generation of game developers, view themselves as, like, I don't know, not people or you know, I got into programming, so I don't have to deal with people, kind of thing. Right. Right? I just want to put on the headphones and type code, and, you know, I'm the grumpy computer person or something like that. Uh-huh. And I think first off, that's not what a team needs, you know, to be perfectly honest, right? Yeah. I would rather take, you know, I take someone who's going to work on the team way before I would take, like, that rock star cowboy programmer who doesn't want to work with anyone, because that's not what you need on a team. Mm-hmm. But also, I don't view that any of that stuff is static anyway. It doesn't have to be who that person is. If someone kind of is self-identifying as someone who's like, oh, I don't like people, it's like, well, you don't have to be that way always. Like, you know, you can practice and, you know, get to know people, and, you know, maybe you're not actually maybe you don't dislike people as much as you say or think you do. Like, you know, I think that mm-hmm. it's the kind of thing that ultimately people can they can learn.
Yeah,
it's a skill like any other, right? They can learn, they can practice, they can make mistakes, they can get better, and it's, you know, it's okay.
Yeah, it's almost like a shield and a cop out, right? Like, they just put that up and just like, I don't talk to people. I don't want to do that because they're afraid, right? They don't want to have to deal with stuff, and so they kind of hide behind that, I'm not a people person, I'm a grumpy person thing.
I think so.
What's been one or two of your favorite games or projects to work on?
I've been very fortunate to work on some really, really cool games. Mm-hmm. Certainly my first love is, and it will always be, StarCraft 2. I was a huge StarCraft 1 fan. It was one of my favorite games as a kid, and getting to work on it was like an absolute joy and thrill. A really cool, fun story is that the day I started on StarCraft II. It was like the weekend after they had announced in Korea that the StarCraft II was a thing, mm-hmm. and Penny Arcade had done a comic,
right,
on someone's. Yeah, and the comic was about someone's first day at Blizzard on the StarCraft II team, and that was my first day at Blizzard on the StarCraft II team. It was so cool, and I just thought it was like, you know, I was like 23 or something. I was a kid.
Yeah,
I just thought it was the greatest thing ever. Eventually, I got it. I got a print of it, and I got them to sign it, and I told them the story. And it was a really cool thing. But yeah, StarCraft will always have a place in my heart. And then of course Fortnite was just a crazy train, and it was so cool to be a part of something that became such a phenomenon. I mean, Fortnite made dancing cool for middle school boys. Like that's insane. Like that was like the power of it. You know, I was watching, I don't think this is a spoiler, but you know, you see Fortnite in lots of media now, right?
Yeah.
And the last place I would have ever thought to see Fortnite, Avengers was fine, right? Like it makes sense. It's the same target demo,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I'm watching Handmaid's Tale. And Fortnite comes up. It's what? Like, wait, what? It's like Handmaid's Tale. Like, this is not the place I would have expected to see Fortnite. And so just like that kind of reach that game had was super cool. And it was just cool because we were constantly fixing problems that had never been solved before, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's the problems of scale, and you know, it was such a cool project in so many ways.
From my understanding, please correct me where I'm wrong here, but it was, yeah, something was like prototyped, and it was just seeing what was going to happen, and it just kind of took off organically. And then it was, you know, like a meteor, right? It just like blew up. And then it's like, right, like, you know, we had 10,000 players, and the next day we had 10 million players. Like, holy shit, what are we going to do? You know, just being on the front lines of that, that'd be pretty.
That's right. And then, wild. I mean, just, and surfing that tsunami of a wave while trying to build the rest of the game at the same time and doing it while like breaking new ground. I mean, my team was the team that did crossplay, for example. And that was such a cool project. And I just felt like, you know, that was a moment of like, wow, okay, we are changing the industry here too. Like, this isn't just about like making a cool game that we have to be working on. Like we pushed for a thing that now is becoming more and more standard. And I'm a true believer of crossplay. Like I'm absolutely a true believer in that. And so it was really cool to get to work on stuff like that.
That Penny Arcade you mentioned, it was to date myself, there was Far Side. I remember the comic book stuff.
Of course.
And there was like this picture of like the pimple face kid in glasses playing, you know, video games, and the parents were like dreaming about, you know, $100,000, kill Goombas, you know, like,
yes,
like
it was that's
like
right.
a big joke, like, oh, but he's planting the seed for his future career. And when you saw the Far Side, it was like comical, right? Like nobody does real games for a while.
Oh yeah.
You know, but it was like that Far Side, I still have that. They always used to.
Oh yeah. Well, now of course you've got Twitch with the actual players making that insane amount of money and making more money than the developers in many cases.
Right. Yeah. 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 That's like a whole new world that that wasn't around. What about potential threats do you see to the industry and opportunities?
I think from the threats standpoint, I think that one of the problems is going to be if the big companies don't get their shit together, to be perfectly honest, right? Like in terms of how they develop games, how they treat their employees and players and things like that. And so, you know, it seems like every week there's another big article about some sad, bad, disappointing thing that's happening at one of the big studios. And I get it, they're targets. So the press is going to look for problems, but I mean, problems are legitimate too. So, you know, I really think that they've got to get their shit together.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that if not, all that we were talking about before, in terms of the brain drain and stuff like that is just going to continue. And that can be a real threat to the industry.
Yeah. What about opportunities? Like, what are you excited about? Like, you know, you mentioned crossplay and all these kind of things. So.
Yeah. I mean, the crossplay is a great example, but the one that comes to mind right now is kind of almost the opposite of the big company problem, and that's the startup space right now that's going on. There's just been this massive explosion in new startup companies, and what I love about it is these companies have all kind of like huddled together in the dark, and we're like collaborating and, you know, sharing ideas and sharing learnings and working together, and you know, these are all. I mean, I'm a part of a bunch of different groups of startup companies that, you know, the CEOs, we all just chat about various topics and help each other and learn and, like I said, collaborate. And you wouldn't think that that's how it would operate. Like, I never expected it'd be that collaborative and that helpful among everyone, but it makes sense too, because I know a lot of these people anyway, and they're everyone's, you know, these are all amazing people who are all starting new companies for about the same reason. And I just think it's such a awesome, friendly place. And I think that this is how you get innovation. You know, I think that it's the kind of the VC ecosystem, I think, is better suited to innovation than, say, the big company publisher ecosystem, because the VCs are looking to make bets. Like, that's their whole business model is, you know, they'll make 20 bets, assume that
one's
got
100
fail, and exactly. And so they really are truly looking for innovation and cool new ways to make games. And, you know, they're all hoping that the company they invest in turns into the next Roblox. And I'd say the Roblox is a very innovative game, or, you know, or Epic or Minecraft or whatever the game might be. And when you look at across all of them, they are like the template is highly innovative games. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to plant lots of seeds and see which ones take off. And doing it, what I see, at least my experience so far, has been in a very positive, supportive way.
That's exciting to hear, right? Like, I came through the days when, and even within the same company, like, management would pit teams against each other, right? Like, people, and they wouldn't share technology, and they would backstab each other, and it was like us or them, you know, and that was like the philosophy, like, you know, survival of the fittest. Let's throw them out there, and whoever can't, you know, rise to the occasion. And you know, just thinking back on that, this is kind of dumb, right? It's the same company. Like, so the fact that you're, you know, part of this group, you know, of other people at other companies, you know, in this same space, but that you're collaborating and working together, that's really refreshing to hear. That's
It looks a lot more like group therapy sessions in a lot of ways, where like we'll get together and there'll be, you know, 8, 10, 15 of us, whatever it is. Yeah. And we'll all just openly share with each other in a very safe space kind of way. And it's great.
Yeah.
And you know, it's you know, like I said, it's very supportive.
Right. And people will be like, man, I don't have to deal with this. And someone's like, hey, I got an idea. You know, I tried this and it worked, and you know, and you know, it's probably Slack or Zoom or something like that. But you know, when you're all remote now, that you can do those kind of things. And
that's right.
That's really refreshing. That I'm more optimistic about things sometimes now than I from my days of past. So no, that's great to hear.
Good.
What about thoughts on AR and VR?
I do have an Oculus collecting dust in the corner of my room here. VR, I just don't have a lot of experience with VR in particular. Mm-hmm. I do think that there's some cool technology there ultimately, but you know, I do think it. I mean, it's becoming less tethered. That's important.
Right.
It's becoming smaller. That's important. These are all the right things. I do expect that over time it'll improve. AR, on the other hand, I think is a lot more interesting. I think AR is super cool, mostly because the power requirements are just less, and so you can get smaller and less tethered quicker in the AR space.
Right.
And so I think there's a lot of really interesting applications with it. You know, it's not something that I have spent a lot of time thinking about or working on, but I'm interested in AR. I mean, even outside games, like I want AR on my like windshield of my car and stuff like that for all those different kind of assistance things. Mm-hmm.
It is great to have reduced the tethering and the weight and the size and the cost. And I'll say it again, but it's Facebook and Zuckerberg and ads and what are they doing with the data and all that kind of stuff. And that just kind of creeps me out a little bit.
I put that in the same category. I was just reading an article about the Facebook ads in Oculus today. And I put that in the same category as a threat if the big companies aren't getting their shit together.
Yeah. It's going to turn people off, right? Like you're trying to get them in this medium and like, oh shit, now I got to watch an ad in 3D. So here's a question, and it's a big one, but like, what's a funnier odd story from working in the industry? And I'm sure you have plenty of those.
I do. It's, you know, it's hard to pick the right one, but,
pick two,
I think
if
one,
you need, whatever works.
Yeah, sure. I think one fun one, because it's particularly embarrassing for myself, was so after StarCraft II Heart of the Swarm came out, or as it was coming out, I was invited to go to Korea as part of the announcement. So they sent two of us. They sent, the way that Blizzard did their global announcements at the time was they'd send two devs to all the different regions. And so I got selected with one other to go to Seoul, Korea, which is, of course, cool. Like mecca of StarCraft.
Oh, yeah.
That's
religion,
awesome.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, right. And so we're there for a whole week and we're, you know, touring the different PC bangs and, you know, we're doing different events and esports events. And of course, it all culminates in the global launch. And the way that, of course, time zones work is that Korea is also the opening of all of the events. It's you know, the first one to go live.
Right.
And as part of it, they had this big televised stage event. And, you know, they would do almost like the New Year's thing where it's like, you know, and every hour they like, you know, go to the next region or whatever it is, right? So yeah. It all starts with Korea, though. Korea is number one, right?
Okay.
And so part of it is, you know, they want to kind of parade us on stage and wave as part of the thing. And kind of the morning of, one of the people from the Blizzard office in Korea was like, you know, it'd be really cool is if you can like welcome this by saying this phrase in Korean. And I don't speak Korean at all. Uh-oh. Right? Like not at all.
Oh, no.
And they write this down in like kind of phonetic so that I can kind of understand it. I was memorizing it all day, just like really focused. like, okay, I got this. And I think I had it pretty well. Right.
Okay.
And so on stage, about to go on stage, they kind of call us on. We go on there. I start to wave. You know, they welcome me on. They're saying something in Korean to welcome me or whatever. And I'm supposed to say this line, and I just full on like I have no memory of it at all. I complete blank. I'm sitting there. This is like this live broadcast. I don't know. There's probably a million people watching it or whatever it was. And I'm just like frozen on stage with like no memory of what to say. I'm kind of blank. You know, everyone's like silent. It's like a nightmare scenario.
Crickets.
Yeah, exactly. And so I just wave. And I say, "Kamsahamnida." Like the one word I learned was "thank you." Kamsahamnida. Stage, and here's the bullshit of all that. To this day, I still remember that phrase. Like I still remember that phrase.
Wow.
Like it's like burned into my memory. But I didn't have it at that moment. And of course, afterwards, I get back. They're like, "So what happened on stage? Like you seemed like really nervous or something." I was like, "Yeah, I was supposed to say this thing." Gotta remember it, so. Yeah.
Right. And you memorize decades later. You're like, oh,
yeah, still. I mean, it's been literally, this is 2013. It's been 8 years, and I still remember that phrase.
Yeah. Being on stage and those kind of things is weird, right? Because it messes with your brain a little bit. And I've had a couple of events where I've been online or on camera on stage, and it's like, if you're not used to it and you're not comfortable with it, it can be weird. So
yeah. Yep.
That's good. You worked through it. You said something, so that's positive.
Yeah. Oh, and just in case anyone's curious, what that means is now is the time for Heart of the Swarm, apparently. So that's what they wanted me to say.
They should just like, what's Korean for play? Like just
yeah, right? Exactly. Exactly.
Go in Korean. No, it must have been a very fun event and exciting. Is that? Again, right? I mean, it's televised events, you know.
Yeah.
It is like their it is a culture and a
oh yeah, they made a really big deal out there. Like there were buses with Kerrigan's face plastered across the bus thing. We did a press release or press conference with like the full-on thing like you'd expect, where there's like 40 journalists all flashing cameras and we're like answering questions, and like, you know, it was cool. I don't think any other region did that level of stuff.
Yeah,
right. But like they took it very seriously out there.
Right, you're playing Rockstar, like, where's my water? No, I said sparkling water. Well, get out of sparkling water.
And that's funny because, like, I mean, I'm not a rock star by any stretch, but they had like handlers for us that kept asking us, "Can we get you anything, sir? Can we get you anything, sir?" And I was like, "I don't know. Like, yeah, I guess I'll have some water." Oh, but actually, the other thing too is in Korea, apparently they don't believe in water at all. Like,
soju. It's all soju, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like the entire time I was there, it was drinking beer and soju, eating spicy food and very salty food. And I was not more dehydrated than I've ever been in my life. I asked for water a couple times at a restaurant, and they bring out this like little thimble. Like they're confused why you would want water.
They say, "More soju?" They're like, "No. Yeah. I want water. Yeah, rehydrate. All this spicy chicken and
yes, soju. Exactly.
My tongue is stuck to the roof of my mouth and I have a hangover." Like,
yes, no, exactly. Yeah.
Or soju? No, stop. that's fantastic. Is there anything I should have asked you about but didn't? Like, hey, what about this?
I really don't have anything else. And we talked a lot about remote culture. That's something that I do also feel strongly about. I do think that the future is all remote, truly. And we set up Lightforge to be all remote even before COVID was a thing. Right. You know, we believe that it was 2020 at the time. We're like, hey, we're starting a company in the year 2020. What does a company look like 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years from now? What's the next generation? Gen Z is already in the marketplace, in the workplace. You know, right. What does it look like as they start to come up and the next generation behind them? And so, mm-hmm. You know, we made a very conscious choice that all remote is critical to who we are as a business. We also believe, you know, we talked a lot about empathy as well, that there's nothing more disruptive that a company can do to someone's life than to ask them to relocate for a job. And we didn't want to do that. We've done it. We've been asked many times ourselves to relocate. I've, you know, lived all over. And I didn't want to ask anyone else to move where I wanted to live. And so we set ourselves up to be all remote from the very beginning, set up all of our communication channels, everything we do. And that also means that we've got, being all remote, we've got people in Scotland, we've got someone in Hawaii. Wow. We've already got a 12-hour time gap. So we don't have core hours. We actually practice non-linear work days for whatever each person is, you know, needs that's correct for their lifestyle. We practice asynchronous communication. So like we're really trying to develop in a very different way. This all is connected to all the stuff that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
And I think it's working really well. I'm really happy with how it's turning out. I think it's absolutely a new way to work. And I hope that this is something that can really be a trend within the industry.
Yeah. And that's great. It's not just North America. Like you're saying, Hawaii, which is from you, like 9 hours?
It's eight hours from the East Coast.
Yeah.
And then Scotland is 5 hours the other direction from the East Coast. I guess we're 13 hours.
Okay. Is it the traditional Zooms and Slacks and things, or is there other stuff?
We're using a virtual office piece of software that is amazing, but it's kind of like a private test right now that we have through connections that we have. It's fun because it's made by game developers, so they get a lot of the kind of human computer interaction stuff and make it more fun in a lot of ways than what you get for Zoom, which is just like totally utilitarian. And so we view it as a virtual office more so than just video chat. And so people hang out in there, and it's got all sorts of fun features in it that I want to get into right now.
Yeah,
but it's something that really has changed how we work. And so that's a big part of it. We use Miro a lot. We use Slack, but Slack is really for transient conversations. We also use Notion for conversation or documents that are supposed to stick around. Mm-hmm. And so we've given a lot of thought into how we communicate, what's urgent versus not urgent,
right.
You know, what channels we use. And so I think we've really settled on something that works nicely for at least the size we're at right now. I can't claim that this will work for a 5,000 person company, but for 11 people, it's working really well.
It's cool that you've been able to kind of just not bolt that on, but like, or retrofit it, but like from the ground up that you did it that way. And again, that's smart, right? Like your talent pool expands dramatically when you're not like trying to recruit from a 80 mile radius of.
That's right. And what we've had is a number of the people after we hired them, they've relocated out of the cities that they were living in and to places where there are no game developers because that's where they wanted to live for their lives. We actually have one person who's a digital nomad. He floats around and has his kind of small form factor computer that he brings with him everywhere and goes and visits family and friends and stuff like that. And so it really empowers just an entirely different kind of lifestyle than living in Orange County or LA or Montreal or Seattle or wherever it is.
Yeah. The biggest thing, which is kind of ubiquitous now, is, you know, a solid internet connection, right? So that's what you really need. That's your pipeline. And then you just have your tools and figure out how to make it work and be responsive, but then also know when there's time to be away. So hats off to you guys. That's great that you set it up that way, and it seems to be succeeding. So cool. Where can people find you online? Like a website, Twitter, things like that?
Yeah, so Lightforge can be found at lightforge.gg, and we've got Twitter at Lightforge Games. I can also be found on LinkedIn via my name, Matt Shimberry. And you can also, my name's a little harder to spell. You can find it on our website. It's connected from there. Yeah, exactly.
It's like my name. Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes. Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, exactly. And I'm also on Twitter at Matt Shinberry.
And then just, you know, last question, like what's one piece of advice you give others working in the industry right now?
Embrace empathy. Yeah. I think that's the most important thing that we can do as an industry. And I think it would help solve a lot of the problems that we're currently facing. And I think it makes better games. I think that the games will come out better in the end.
Right. And understand what's going on with the player and not just like, I'm just doing it that way because I'm doing it. That's why I want to do it. I'm not going to listen to players.
You know? What's the player feeling? You know, what are their motivations? Why are they doing this? Why is the programmer feeling this way? When the programmer writes code, how is the artist going to use the code that they just wrote? Like I think it's just, this is how humans, this is how society functions. And so, you know, I think that's probably the most important piece of advice.
Yeah. Yeah. I think downstream, not just like throw it over the wall and like your problem now, you know, but exactly. How are they going to receive it? And then where do they go from it with it? And then where does it go from there? So
that's right.
Cool. Well, thank you, Matt. Thanks for being on tonight and really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Game Dev Advice, the Game Developers Podcast. Go to the website at gamedevadvice.com and you can find the show notes along with show notes for all the other episodes. Please also check out the new Patreon page at patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Have a lot of options up there for how you can support the show. Again, that's patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Thanks again for listening and being part of the show. Take care. Bye-bye.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.